For those of us of a certain age, you might remember that Jeremiah was a bullfrog. He was a good friend of mine, and what did he have? Very fine wine, as I recall. This is not that Jeremiah. This is Jeremiah the prophet reminding us that the covenant that God had with the people of Israel was broken by the people of Israel. It is a foretaste of the new covenant that is to come with Jesus Christ. This new covenant that is to come is not only laid out in the Gospels, but also St. Paul speaks of it in 2 Corinthians, and in the Hebrews, it's also spoken of. This new covenant created by God through his sacrifice of his Son for the sinfulness of all of us. That original Sinai covenant, the Ten Commandments given to the people by Moses, the people didn't respond. But yet with this new covenant, it is God and God alone who will put into the hearts of the people the power to respond with love. And we call that grace. We heard about grace in the opening prayer as we began Mass. Father prayed, may the working of your mercy, O Lord, direct our hearts aright. For without grace, we cannot find favor in your sight. Grace is this abundant and free-flowing effect of God upon our lives that helps us do what we are called to do and be the people whom we are called to be. Psalm 51 was our psalm today, and we only hear parts of the entire psalm. For those of us that pray the daily office, the liturgy of the hours, we hear Psalm 51 regularly. And it's a psalm of forgiveness. It's this understanding that I'm not all I should be. It says in the psalm that my sin is always in front of me. I know what I have done. And in the first half of the psalm, it's that recognition that sin weighs me down like an illness would. It affects me emotionally, physically, and even has social consequences. The sin that we do, the sin that we act out. Now, in our second reading today, you do know that there is biblical evidence that men are to make coffee. This book today, Hebrews. You'll get it about 9:30, I think, this morning. But of course, it is St. Patrick's Day, so I would be remiss as a good Irishman if I didn't remind you that there's another form of brewing available to us in our world today. Perhaps many of us will raise a Guinness later on today. But again, Hebrews is reminding us of this prayer of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. And he is the high priest, Jesus is. It says that Jesus often offered prayers and supplications to the Father. He did it with reverence and obedience. And what was the outcome of that? The cross. We often wonder, when is Jesus in his glory? And it's said to us by theologians that it's at that moment that Jesus is in his glory. In the middle of his passion and suffering, he is in his glory, for it is for that moment that he came to this world. And folks often ask me, you know, why did Jesus come then instead of perhaps now? If Jesus wanted followers, now is the time to show up. Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and all the rest of the social media. You want millions of followers? Jesus could have had them. He could have had his own YouTube channel. He could have had his own podcasts. He could be followed by hundreds of billions of people. But he chose to come when he did. Not that I have insights into the thinking of God the Father. But if we stop for a moment and think that according to Jewish law, when an offense is committed, it must be repaid in kind. If Jesus came to die for our sinful behavior, we have to consider the sins we are speaking about. The most heinous, horrific, horrible things that man can do to one another. Think the Holocaust. Think world wars. Think Hamas. Think, unfortunately, of the things we see on a regular and daily basis in this world of ours, the violence that one human being does to another. So if Jesus is to make recompense for all of that evil, a simple paper cut is not going to do it. And if he showed up today, the way that we inflict capital punishment today by lethal injection, the only thing he would say is what I hear from the phlebotomist. You'll feel a little pinch here. That's not how one compensates for the sin and evil in the world. It needed to be similar. The amount of horror needed to be replaced with an amount of horror. So for Jesus to die when he did, when capital punishment was inflicted in the most cruel and unusual way, when the things that happened to him were a reflection of our sin to each other, his scourging, his carrying the cross, his hanging on that cross, lets us know that he was willing to do whatever it take for the most horrific of offenses against God the Father. So he came, of course, as God would, at the right time, in the right place. In John's gospel, we hear about Jesus' hour coming. Now, John does not speak in his gospel about the agony in the garden. This is very reminiscent of the Synoptic Gospels writers, that his time has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. He wished that it could be taken away. The human side of Jesus, remember, fully human, fully divine. Jesus was scared. He knew as a human being that what was going to happen to him, he saw how others had died on a cross. He knew what scourging was. He knew how vicious the Romans could be. And he was scared. And he asks, as any human would, I don't want to do this. Can't this cup be taken away from me? But then Jesus, fully divine, knows that it must happen. He must make amends for the sin of the world. And so in this moment, Jesus, fully human and fully divine, both sides are working against each other. Jesus knew all along what was going to happen. Kenosis, this outpouring of Jesus as human and still as God, I often suggest this idea. Many of us have played a game with a child or a grandchild. And I have no doubt that many might have exercised all their skill, their cunning, their wisdom as they beat the pants off that kid in that game. Or maybe you rolled a 6, but you only moved 5 because you know if you got to 6, it would take you to the next level. Or maybe you knew darn well they were holding a pair of 4s during Crazy 8 and you deliberately asked if they had any kings. You knew what was going on. You chose not to act on it. Jesus in his life was much the same way. As a fully human person and also fully divine, he knew the Father's will. He knew what was going on. He was God, but he limited himself, that he might be like us, and only tell us what we needed to know. Because if he gave it to us all, we couldn't handle it. Jesus speaks about the grain of wheat falling to the ground and dying. And why does the grain need to die so that much fruit comes from it? Jesus needed to die that many might come to believe. He says, when I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw everyone to myself. As if the resurrection wasn't enough to bring believers to him, then there was his assumption into heaven, his lifting up from the earth. Jesus needed to die that many might believe. And because of his death, many have come to believe. Many came to believe without all of that sacrifice, without all of that horror. They saw his glory in the cross. I was asked recently, why do we Catholics leave Christ on the cross? Our Protestant brothers and sisters only have a cross, and that's enough for them. Well, there was a time in my life when I was a cop. And if you have ever seen any of the police-type shows where there is someone who has died horribly, the family members always want to see what happened so that they might believe. It's true in real life, and we see it in the movies. We want to see that we might recognize, see that we might believe. We Catholics see what happened. I like to say that we don't clean up the crime scene. We leave it the way it was, so we can remember exactly what happened to Christ, what he was willing to endure for us and our salvation. Psalm 51, today's psalm reading. I might suggest that this week you take a look at that. Be aware of who we are. Be aware of what the psalmist was asking for. He was asking for forgiveness and a recognition of God's love in his life. And I think it fitting as we approach Holy Week, just a week away, with Palm Sunday, that we be reminded of the sacrifice that Christ made for us. And as we relive that week, remember that this week is brand new for some. From the little ones, from those who are coming into the church, for those who are experiencing God's love for the very first time. It's not a ho-hum, let's do this one more time. It's not the watching the Titanic where, yep, it's going to hit the iceberg again. But rather being present in the moment. Having that reminder the church gives us to say this is what Christ was willing to do for humans. Because of our offenses. To take the time to think about that as we reflect on the events of Holy Week. Now, of course, for Holy Week, we've got two other little feasts to celebrate. One today, St. Patrick's Day. St. Patrick, the slave that was brought into Ireland as a child, who escaped, went back to England, and became a priest and made his way back to Ireland. To convert the people there, to explain, they try to explain the doctrine of the Trinity using the shamrock, not complete, but at least a starting point. And it's been said that some of the things, some of the seeds, if you will, that Patrick planted in Ireland grew fruit all over Europe as those who were converted in Ireland made their way into England, Scotland, and across Europe. Preaching, evangelizing, spreading the good news. And I have a book that my dad had that sits beside my catechism on the nightstand, How the Irish Saved Civilization, and I believe it. But that's because I'm Irish. We also have a very special saint that we celebrate this week as well, St. Joseph on the 19th. Saint Joseph, that earthly father of Jesus Christ, that wonderful man who likely had been married before, there are some stories and some traditions that hold that true, that had lost his wife. And when time came for him to be betrothed to Mary, only to find out after a little while that she was with child. The man that stood up, straightened his back, and said, I will do what the Lord asks me to do. I will follow the Lord. Saint Joseph, the only guy in history to live with two perfect people, poor guy. Hey, did somebody leave? Never mind, I probably did it. But the gift that Jesus had in this strong and capable man, being a father, being a dad, teaching him a trade, teaching him, as we learn in the domestic church, in our homes, to love, to care, to be polite, to be a gentleman, to take care of others. Those are the things that Joseph taught his son. So we look to Joseph, we revere Joseph. We recognize Joseph in his role as patron of the Roman Catholic Church. Joseph is one of those that you tell what you want done, because all of Joseph's revelations come in a dream. His dream to marry, to be wed to Mary. His dream to flee to Egypt to avoid Jesus being killed. His dream to return back to Galilee. So Saint Joseph, in all his gifts, is a role model for all fathers, and we look to him. We pray to him. We ask for his intercession and his assistance. But as good Catholics, we know that Jesus' glory is on the crucifix. It is there that he demonstrated his love for each and every one of us as he held out his arms and said, I love you this much.